repeat that, LaTanya, if you just don't what?
If you don't block it.
If you don't block it. Don't block it.
If you don't block it. I've heard people say, you know, if people that really know me, including you, I'm a really loving, loving, no-nonsense person. I'm also a giver. My mother always says, if I would have known how to give as much as you. My mother, she said, I didn't teach you that. Something in you, because when you give, you get, right? And when you say words, those words are out there, they come right back to you. So when you say something negative on social media, well, I just got to say this. I have to, everything comes back to you. That's blocking things.
Yes.
The time people waste worried about something they're not in control of, right? I remember Dick Gregory was like my godfather, and Dick Gregory and I spent a lot of time together, and we traveled. And I'm not name dropping, but it was myself, Dick Gregory, and Cicely Tyson in the back of a seat of a car in Tennessee.
Welcome to Black Women's World Podcast, the BWWP. Where we get VIP access into the lives of Black women, or as we like to call us here, our sister nistas. We get to hear from some of our favorite sister nistas as they share their worlds with us and create connections, exchange realities, ideas, and baby, we get to recognize and celebrate how powerful we really are. Our sisterhood here is real, filled with peace, wisdom, hope, love, light, and laughter. You know, the kind you can feel, the kind of encouragement that confirms we can do anything because we have, and the kind of inspiration that proves we can be even greater. This is our world, where if you ain't a Black woman, you may want to be one, or definitely get to know one. It's a Black women's world, and we welcome our sister Nista lovers too. Welcome to our queendom. I'm your self-discovery companion, your professional peacemaker, and I'm your host, Tracy Mack. Come on in and relax and sit with me for just a little while. Peace.
Well, hello, everybody. I am Tracy Mack, your self-discovery companion and your professional peacemaker and host of Black Women's World Podcast. Today, I have with me a lady that I'm telling you, by the end of the podcast, you are going to understand even the more why I love who she is, what she does, and how well she does it. LaTanya Jr. I have to go over just, I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg about who you are. Let me read your bio, because once you start talking, I'm really going to probably be quiet for a long time. LaTanya was born in Harvey, Illinois. Raised in a small community, and both her parents were passionate. Her father, Marvin Jr., lead singer of the Dells, a world-renowned entertainer. I'm going to tell you, the man could just sing. Just sing! but LaTanya, she witnessed the Dells' career unfold, and they topped Billboard charts, and 46 times, to be exact. And they worked with artists like Ray Charles and Quincy Jones and Jackie Wilson and Gladys Knight and Mick Jagger, Anita Baker, James Brown, B.B. King, and the list goes on and on and on. But LaTanya got to witness that. But even in the evolution of all of that, at the age of 7, she made her first public speaking appearance at 7. You know, I know some of us think we did it because we did an Easter speak at church, Easter speech at church. And then at the age of 14, she started working on promotional and marketing campaigns for her family business and Rose House of Charm at the age of 14. Baby. She is a leading award-winning cross-cultural marketing and communications authority with a 20-year track record. And it really goes beyond that. I don't know why she cut herself short with this, but it goes beyond that. Everything from planning and development, implementing marketing programs, brand management, corporate sponsorship, and it goes on and on. And I hope that you understand the caliber of woman who is before you. I want her to talk. But before she does, listen, some of the people, some of the things she's worked with, some of the awards, the prestigious David Ogilvy Team Award. She's worked with different universities. She's taught at Lehman College in New York, Howard University in Washington, D.C., Patterson University in New York, and Rutgers University. And she has worked with Stedman Graham's organization, Cato Johnson. Latonya, you have done so much. But today, I have to let the people know the caliber who we have before us so that when I lean in, they will lean into to the level of wisdom. Say hello, and then I want to talk about how we met, but just say hello to the people so they can hear your voice.
Hello. Hi there. I just want to say to you, Tracy Mack, thank you for inviting me. I am tickled and proud, and I think this is a wonderful platform for women around the world, and it's a brilliant outlet for a better understanding and in a personal enlightenment about women in color, because we often, you know, we often aren't on the center stage. And just thank you for creating this platform to make sure our voice is heard and there's a better understanding that we are true players in the game.
Yes, we are. And thank you so much, Latonya. Thank you so much. Because as a VIP in the Sister Nista seat today, you and I met, was it 2017, 2016?
Yes.
We met through a mutual friend, Jewel Carter, and Jewel and Latonya go way back. And Jewel and I met in 2014. And we met at an event in Charlotte. And Latonya's presence and who she is and her authority in so many areas, from real estate and education to business and marketing, she just has the type of personality to draw you in, which you will get to witness as soon as I talk. But today we want to kind of talk about the world of real estate, property, those areas. Talk about some of the fears and the economic situation that Black women face as a whole, but as the world faces, those different things that we need to change and those pivots we need to make. Latonya, women, when we met, I was impressed with the way you just had a presence about you. You were able to connect with people at many different levels. Your conversation was broad. You're a great listener even now. So my turn to listen. Talk to the BWWP audience about Latonya Jr.
Yeah, well, you know, I do remember the day we met, and it was a great energy. And I was I flew down because, of course, there was this event, and it was a celebration of women and so on, et cetera. But I have to tell you, I genuinely love people. If I can only share with the listening audience and people, I don't have a problem ever, because I'm clear about who I am. I don't have a problem ever finding something positive in humankind. You know, I look at every person as that we are clearly all imperfect, but even the worst considered person can't be perfectly bad, because there's no such thing as perfect. And just, I have trained myself to see the good in the worst situation. And therefore, to do that, you must connect with people. You must listen to people, and you must forgive people. You don't always have to forget, but yes, you absolutely have to forgive, because you have to let that out of your soul. You have to release it from your system. And not forgiving people holds them and yourself hostage. So there's been years of training, just like you. I was so impressed, not just with you, your family. You really walk the talk. You know, you are the real deal. Your husband, I was looking at your husband going, well, where did she get, what happened for them? How did she find, you know? It's just this spiritual rhythm between your authenticity, you know, that you are clearly in a flow. And so I thank you for realizing that I listen. I try, because I do talk a lot also. You know, some of my personal friends will say I talk too much, but it really does come from a place of when the scriptures say, love thy neighbor, I just don't have a problem with that. I just don't have a problem with
that. You know, I love when you just said no one is perfectly bad. I love that. None of us are perfect, but all of us have something good. And when you see the good, because you're the real deal too. You're not just talking this to the audience right now. You walk your talk too. And I see gratitude as my bedrock. But I see that a lot of times I will see you in different arenas and even on social media, you will always say things like, I love that. Or that brings me joy, or that made me smile. And I think sometimes, especially in this racial reckoning that we are in America right now, some people are afraid to express joy and gratitude and sentiments of kindness because it may make them appear weak. And we just mentioned vulnerability. Vulnerability is a strength. And it wasn't until you said the other S word that it just enlightened. Vulnerability is a strength. But you just told me something that I would love for you to share with the audience about vulnerability.
Vulnerability is a strategy. While it is a strength and a sense of being and knowing. You know, let me start by this. Vulnerability has to sit on something. Now, what we often forget, because life gives us a full plate of things to deal with, is that our DNA is just not a reckoning with the connection of the molecule and the blood. Our DNA also is the essence of the brand of who we are. It's called, if you just Google it or go to the Wikipedia and you look up brand DNA, it says the DNA is your brand personality, your brand behavior, right? Your yes. brand voice. And all of this is a part of the essence of who you are. And it sits though, that vulnerability, all of this sits together. It doesn't work in harmony unless you're aware of those things. So I don't have a problem with vulnerability at all, because it allows me to share the essence of my brand personality, the essence of my brand behavior. I can now show you my true self being, and it's authentic, which means I don't have to ever worry about being jealous.
Exactly.
So why am I jealous?
Yes.
This is God's blueprint for me. I'm never going to be. It just doesn't flow within me because it would contradict my balance. And so not to go all over the place. So vulnerability, when you wake up and say, I got to open up this being and show you who I am, that is also a strategy. So here's an example. Let's say I'm going to go and I'm going to buy a house. And I saved just enough, but I am trying to get in that home. And I hear so many people say, oh, I got to go and deal with this credit. Oh, I got to go get my credit clean. Da, 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 da. And so I said, call them. Call the credit card company. Tell them the truth. No, they hear it all the time. No, that's not your business what they hear. You're supposed to show up and tell your story, get vulnerable, and tell the truth. And then you'll say to them, well, let me just tell you, I don't want to be a broken record. I don't know anyone else's story, but I can only tell you mine. Now strategy kicks in, because I'm going to use my vulnerability as a strategic move to connect with this person over the phone so we can create the best fair deal that works for the both of us. And they're going to listen, because everyone craves authenticity, whether they yes. believe it or not.
Yes.
So, you know, that's what I say. If a criminal comes and they get ready to shoot you, they say, tell him your name. Excuse me, sir. My name is Latonya and I have children and my mother loved me. And a wicked person will say, wait a minute. Don't tell my name. Don't tell me your name. I don't want to know. I don't yes. want to know. Oh, no. Yes. And so we do this all the time. You know, it's there for us. And so it's really important to know vulnerability is a powerful thing. And yes. it's also a strategy. And when used as a strategy, it reduces fear.
Yes, yes.
When vulnerability yes. is used as a strategy, it reduces fear, and this unknown confidence come up.
Yes.
This unknown self-empowerment come up. This unknown yes. sense of being and presence come in. Then you get this letter that says, I got a pre-qualification. And now you don't know how to act.
Yes.
Now you're like, wait a minute.
Yes, right? yes. That vulnerability. Oh my God. You just said so much. We can hang on that for a few weeks, because it is amazing when you allow yourself to be seen, when you yeah. allow yourself to be authentic. There is no competition, because if I see something in you that I like, then I can appreciate it in you, because it connects me to you. I don't have to be you. I don't have to want what you have. And that to me is what self-discovery is all about. When I know who I am, my weaknesses, or my vulnerabilities, and my strengths, then there is no competition because no one is me. No one can do, they can do what I do. They can do what you do. They can do it kind of how you do it, but they can't be you doing it. So that to Absolutely. Me eliminates this whole cattiness about being competitive. And I know people say that there, you know, there's healthy competition. I don't see it. I have to see it as complementive. It's complementive any way I look at it.
I agree completely, but it happens. It functions differently and it exists in patches of our life, right? And so I think you and I've discussed what we call the adoption process in business. It's really five levels. All humans, they sort of dump you into five cups. One's going to be a maven, a connect, an early adopter, and then it goes down to laggards, correct?
Yes.
And there's a different level of knowing, consciousness, confidential, and empowerment and fear at each level, right? And so the laggers, which are considered, and I never liked the word laggers, and I've challenged that in business and changed it when I was at Ogilvy & Mathers. I wouldn't use it a part of my communications because I always said, you know, you talk about laggers, but they created, you know, rap, uh-huh, right? Uh-huh. They're able to create something that influenced the early adopters and connectors and so on, et cetera. But you know, that doesn't happen every day, but it happened. But that being said and done, I've taught over 600 courses and I've written courses. And what I have come to learn is that I find that people that are making less than $200,000 now don't send us a lot of emails. Not everyone.
Yes.
But I've been in enough classrooms where I know I find people not even wanting to tell me what their business is about because they're afraid someone in the room is going to steal it. Right. And I've come to track and know businesses that's making a certain income have those challenges. It's also what's holding them back because I can crunch numbers, baby. And when I crunch numbers, it will absolutely share. We have more than enough business for everyone.
Yes.
But you don't have to worry about someone stealing your idea.
Yes.
At this grassroots level, you know. And so that being said and done, then I noticed that they behave differently in that $500,000 range. They're not afraid of anyone stealing their business. There's other issues, social, emotional, and connecting issues. And then it goes up when we get to that level where women are in between 1 to 5 million. They're always trying to figure out how do we reach back in the community and how we get people that's going to be authentic and real that we can connect to and leverage our partnerships. And we try to grow as many people in the community. But there's this constant disconnect because that those entrepreneurs making less than $250,000 a year, they don't know what those entrepreneurs are thinking that's making $1 million. You know why? They don't show up to the same conference.
They don't have the same conversations.
They don't have the resources to get into the conference. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How about that? Because I've spoken at those conferences where it's $4,000 or $5,000 to get in for 2 hours, right? Well, a business making $50,000 a year, they can't get into that. They have to wait till I go to the SBA and do a guest speaking engagement to get a fraction of the information. So yes. the networking is disconnected.
Yes, yes, you know? Yes.
It's like me knocking on an Oprah Winfrey conference and say, y'all let me in.
Yeah.
Well, I probably can get in, but.
you can probably get in.
Yeah, I could probably, but most people wouldn't be able to. And I think that's a part of the cattiness is that our social groups aren't engaging and mentoring enough to let them know on the other side of where you are, up a few steps, up further along, the people you're traveling with, they're going to change and adjust.
Yes.
You're going to pivot, but you got to pivot at the right time because people like to say pivot.
Yes.
That's the pivot. And then you have to know how fast to come out of that pivot and when to pivot again, correct?
And you've got to know what you're pivoting into, what you don't know about what you're pivoting into, and be willing to be teachable and coachable to learn from those who are a few steps ahead of you in the shift and in your pivot. Because I find that a lot of times, whether it be in the real estate market, finances, even in self-help, a lot of people don't want you to think they don't know. And that exists in a certain income bracket, because I know that the higher end people or the more financial wealth to a great degree that people have, the more they remain teachable, the more they realize they don't know everything, the more they understand the sense of community and collaboration. Do you agree with that, LaTanya?
I not only agree with that, but that's when fear kicks. That's, you know, it's this place of fear that's in that space. They don't know what they don't know. And I always say, but what will you lose knowing, right? What will you lose if you know? Because you already don't know.
would it be vulnerability? What will you lose if you ask?
Or ask. Because sometimes people, believe it or not, I really believe that if people just get quiet, you'll realize everything you need is constantly being told to you. You don't have to ask as much if you listen. You can feel it. You can feel a shift, just like you can feel the weather change and say, oh, I got to chill. Oh, let me grab my sweater before I leave the house, right? Yeah. And then you realize the weather's going to change dramatically in 2 or 3 hours without ever watching the weather report. We are made in such a way. It is a true divine miracle of blessing. And you have to understand, we really are equipped with everything if you just don't block it. Now, people may say that may be easier for you to say time.
And repeat that, LaTonya. If you just don't what?
If you don't block it.
If you don't block it.
If you don't block it. If you don't block it. I've heard people say, you know, if people that really know me, including you, I'm a really loving, loving, no nonsense person. I'm also a giver. My mother always says, if I would have known how to give as much as you, my mother, she said, I didn't teach you that. Something in you, because when you give, you get. Right. And when you say words, those words are out there. They come right back to you. So when you say something negative on social media, well, I just got to say this. Everything comes back to you. That's blocking things.
Yes.
The time people waste worried about something they're not in control of. Right. I remember yes. Dick Gregory was like my godfather, and Dick Gregory and I spent a lot of time together, and we traveled. And I'm not name dropping, but it was myself, Dick Gregory, and Cicely Tyson in the back of a seat of a car. And Tennessee, okay, you know, and I was thinking to myself, why am I in this car? And so Dick Gregory and Cicely Tyson was talking, and it was about 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was keeping my mouth shut so I can learn and absorb anything. And Dick Gregory pat me on my arm, and he said, listen, you can't worry about what happened yesterday because you can't change it. You cannot worry about what's going to happen tomorrow because it is not promised to you. You must live right now in this moment. Treat yourself like an addict, one day at a time, one small step at a time. And so when the negativity go out, when the fear, when you are, you know, you won't step into the vulnerability, what you're doing is blocking the knowing that gets you to the next level. You're blocking it.
And then some people will blame other people, and it's you, because something you said just a few minutes ago, the art of listening, listening is an art to those who need to learn the lesson, but the power of being able to, number one, listen to yourself, that, you know, we can be trained how to, you know, active listening or whatever, but when we listen and respect ourselves, that's where it begins, and being sensitive to not only listen, but being sensitive enough to do what you say. You can get a self-help 1, 2, 3 ABC from anybody. But if you don't do what you say, you begin to disrespect what anyone else says.
Yeah, you have to be a word is bond person. I keep my word with myself. I do have a right to change my mind, but I have to give a rationale for it. I just can't do it because I can do what I want to do. I have to give myself boundaries.
Yes.
I have friends that are not in my social group, but I love them dearly. I make sure I give them special time. I have to pull back because I start to defuse, but I still confront it. I try to really organize my space because that's still a space of learning. As a matter of fact, it reminds me what I don't want to be, what I don't want to do. But you know, if you take that in regards to how it reduces your productivity, it changes everything. So let me give you some numbers. I was just reading, and I read all the time, so I throw a lot of numbers around. I was just reading that no one outpaces a business of color, a person of African-American descent, in small business development. Business.
I need you to say that again, because that's so
no
powerful.
One. Of all people of color, African-Americans outpace everyone. What's really slick less than 25% have a bachelor's degree, maybe 30% have a master's, but basically you're dealing at most people of the successful business don't have any degree. This is heavy, right? 42% of African-American businesses in 2021 is in the happy space. 50% to 53% started the business out of their own pocket. My brother, will you give me $1,500? Will you give me $200? And so on, et cetera. We are at a phenomenal moment in history. But explain to me why Black home ownership has decreased in the last 3 years. Now, but if people would have listened, Barack Obama set up programs that changed the American real estate landscape. They came in with forgiveness loans if you buy a house in a certain area. They came in with tax breaks if you buy. They came in with, we'll put down a deposit or play the closings. Some cities actually make the seller pay for the buyer's closing or a part of it. Literally being able to get in a home in America with $3,000 to $5,000 to $6,000 to $10,000. And you say to yourself, if we are growing in so many areas, why aren't we taking an area that really creates wealth and control? And that is owning your own home. When you own that house, if you break your leg and can't pay that mortgage, you're most likely able to pick up the phone and work out a deal with your mortgage company to put those late payments on the end, but you still have a house. If you find out you lose your job and there's a problem, then move out and rent your house and then bring in some low income and keep your house. I know someone that walked away from a $2 million house because they lost the big contract, and they rented their $2 million house out in California and came back 10 years later and they have a wonderful life. And then they had equity to build another business. There's so many things you can do. Why real estate is my primary focus right now, because when I got that aha moment, that if we can stabilize you in the community, then we can organize mental health. Then we can put our hands around homeowners that have an investment in the local schools and focus and make sure that our schools are doing what they're supposed to do.
So, Tanya, you mentioned the happy space, not having to have a formal education in these Black businesses, but yet the decrease in the past 3 years. What do you think that is, or the cause behind the decrease?
There are several things. It depends on the generation. There's this new generation called YOLO, I think it's called. It's basically living in the moment, living your best life in the moment or something like that. What's interesting enough,
You only live once, YOLO. You only live once. Yes.
But here's what's interesting. 9 students of color are coming out of colleges, and Latino and everybody else coming out, and they're getting homes directly out of college. There are benefits to that. As long as, you know, you're coming out, you got your job, you can actually come right out of college. And a lot of people are, and it's under 35 is kicking butt in home ownership. And then you have the millennial, the older folks doing something differently. And so I think it's different things happening for different reasons. Some is there's a disconnect in the communication. Yes. I mean, when I talk to young people, I say, how often does your mother and grandmother tell you to make sure you get a home? And not just get a home, the benefits of it, the tax breaks. You know, now I got a place I can build a business out of my garage. Nobody can stop me. You know, I can create my own little micro manufacturing company and t-shirt company right in my garage. I don't have to go rent. But it's all these, I can come up with my own recipes for my vegan food right in it. And so some of it is a lack of conversation and communication. But I still think it gets down to core knowledge. I meet people all the time that will go and buy a car, a brand new car, before they buy a house. And what a car does to the credit is a monster.
Yes, especially a brand new car. It depreciates, you know. It depreciates. So rapidly.
And then you go, I just got my new car. And then a year later, I'm going to go buy a house. And they go, yeah, you can get a mortgage, but you're going to get this big mortgage.
Right. Or they're upside down in the car a year out, you know, and through the durations. I heard someone tell me they had 8 years on a car payment.
Yeah, I've heard some really crazy stories, but I hear more than ever. I talk to people in my generation and a little older, and they say, you know, you're so busy dealing with your child, dealing with racism, and just trying to get them in college, we forgot to talk about the house. And I'm saying, do you realize there's programs out there that'll get you your family into a home? So here's what happens. Let me tell you something, Lisa Matt. When in America, the average person, when they buy a home, $89,000 a year, it increases the value of the neighborhood. $89,000 overall, because the cost to buy the flowers and then to get the gutter clean, it increases the economic space in that community. In places like DC, it's almost $188,000. So when you buy the investment, the community, it's better for the community. Besides, it's better for yourself.
But so when you can say, especially from your perspective and how you move in the world, how much of this, when you said mentality, it also, we have to include mental health. When we want to have that conversation, it's hard to help people who pretend they don't need it. It's hard to help people when they pretend like they know everything. So when you are speaking about it will increase the value of $89,000, it will the programs and those things, how much do you think the mental health as well as some of the social norms have a factor into those numbers of people not purchasing homes?
I think it's the backbone. I think it's the backbone to all of it. You know, the biggest issue with mental health is what it's called, right? Now, if I gave it a different name and didn't call it mental health, right? people would show up. Because mental health, immediately people say, well, I'm not on this spectrum, I'm on that spectrum. And then that shuts everyone down. If a person only realized, if you wake up on a daily basis and you lack a certain amount of confidence to do something or drive to do something, right? And you are still blurry about what you want and how you want it, there is a problem. If that's how you are waking up, the problem is that when you call it mental health, people think bipolar and they take off running.
Exactly.
And they think it's the worst situation.
Because then people confuse mental health with mental illness. You know, right. They try to interchange the word. When we're talking about mental health, that's a good place to be in. When we talk about mental illness, that's what we need to deal with and stop the stigma. I taught mental health first aid for 3 years.
Perceptions, everything.
Yeah.
Just the word mental.
Yes.
I'm not talking about those in the knowing. I'm just saying just the word mental have a tendency to make people crawl up in the ball. Now, here's the deal. We live in America. What people of color have had to endure and endure daily, we all need some emotional support.
Absolutely.
We live.
Absolutely.
And so does the people that have implemented this.
Yes, you are so right. Listen, I have traveled all around teaching mental health first aid for years, and it recently just went all online. I missed the travel part of it, but I had to come at it with my Black self from two different perspectives. When I was teaching a Black audience or majority Black audience, I would have to say, we all need, just what you said, based on the trauma that has come down through generations, that is even in our DNA to some degree, we all need this. And then to those other groups of people, mainly Caucasian and rural areas, I would say things like, because of things that you may believe, or things your ancestors may have done, or beliefs that you feel that other people are inferior or you are entitled, there is some mental illness embedded in the sense of entitlement. So we all need some type of mental health support.
When you look at the Fortune 500 companies, I think there's three people of African-American descent that are African-Americans that actually are chairman of a corporation in the United States today. Mm-hmm. Three.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That means all of these corporations that's sitting there, and if you were looking their C-suite, that means their vice president partnership, that's the space I've always worked in, there's normally none or maybe one. The fact that you can get up to work every day and that you develop products and services that impact a $3 trillion industry that are mostly purchased by people of color, and you can't hire people of color to help you actually even create, we already know the science that when you diversify a corporate cabinet or corporate C-suite, we all rise to the occasion. Yes. The products are better. The products are more diversified. They're the right products, and so on, et cetera. And yeah, so it happens at the richest level, trickled all the way down. And I love my white folks, and all the white folks that have sat at the table and watched television and say, hey, there's another cop that killed the black kid. That's really a shame. What can I do? It is not a black problem.
Exactly.
It is, right. And so what can you do? You can get involved. When the little kids are sent home because they have dreadlocks in their head, you can show up to the teacher and parent student meetings and say, that hair is a part of their culture and the celebration of their belief. Therefore, we're not here about hair.
Or their hair is just the way it grows out of their head. Because I know the locks, because I have micro locks. I know locks is when hair has been manipulated to lock up. Right. But with an afro, kids that have been sent home with an afro, that's just the way it grows out of their head. We cannot help that our hair defies gravity and our skin absorbs the sun. That is magical to me.
Stay tuned for more of the BWWP.
Located at 3527 Victory Boulevard in Portsmouth, Virginia, Blutterism Training Center presents Kapow. Our classes are not only to empower women, but to also educate anyone with a desire to learn. We offer self-defense, crime prevention, concealed to carry certification, and much more.
Kapow! Knowledge of life protects better women. Build your confidence with us today.
Visit www.kapowva.com.
You're listening to Black Women's World Podcast.
Let's continue the conversation.
You know?
Absolutely.
No, so, absolutely. Yeah. What some other things our sister-nista lovers who may not look like us can do? Because I agree with you. This is not our problem. We're the most effective.
It is not our problem. I was talking to my therapist. I have all sorts of trainers, girl. I got trainers to get the boobs down. I got trainers. I got so many trainers. I love it, you know. But here's the deal. One thing is that I had said this to her, can you imagine if every white person take on something that's dear to them and go in their community and check and see, is it playing as a role of privilege, and that's ousting people out versus inviting people in, right? If you go to your church and you see that there's one white person, but there's 30% of the population in the neighborhood, talk to people. You know, if you go to your pizza place and you notice that no one's ever there, then maybe suggest once a month, let's do a community dining where it's a flat fee and we diversify and we talk to each other. Everybody, if you don't talk about it, it won't happen. But it still doesn't stop the fact that you have a large population of people of color that feels disenfranchised, that feels hopeless. And that's that area they call laggers. And most corporations are saying, we can't reach it. You have to be in that community and so on, et cetera. But I do think people of color are also part of the problem. And y'all can send me all the emails you want, because I'm going to read the science to you. I am constantly mentoring at least 12 businesses a year, right? It's my duty. Call me. If it gets to this place, I'll pick up the phone. I get calls probably 6 or 7 times a week. I don't have to spend a lot of time on the phone. I'm connecting LA with New York, New York with someone. These are the right people. Make sure that this small business don't get on the wrong track, right? It's something as simple as that. Just going into your Rolodex and making sure that you connect the right, you know, people which you know that are credible what they do and are kind about giving out information. Yeah.
You know, it's like with anything, and I have to go back biblically, to use what's in your hand. God told Moses, use what's in your hand. We all have a tool, a resource, something that we contribute to the world that we can use to help one another. If someone is white or not non-black, there's always something you can do. Latonya just gave you some suggestions, but if nothing else, stand with us. But I tell you what, I refuse to get looped into, which has been the attempt has been made, that I become politically correct. Anyway, some organizations have wanted to bring me in as a token. to come in and talk to people. No. You can't use us that way either. You can't bring us in as the token to make the conversation easier for you or to prove that you have attempted to diversify. I was brought, one organization was brought to my attention. Their whole diversity and inclusion department was white. I'm like, how can you not see?
I see it all the time.
And this is not going to work. What in the world?
I see it all the time. I see it all the time. But you know, what we've done, I know in the advertising and marketing world, it used to be the most vibrant place, a lot of Black ad agencies and so on, et cetera. And some of the greatest talent on the planet walked away in the 80s and 90s because of diversity and inclusion. People felt that they were being used. They take a slice of your insight, use it, dump the rest. Or they think they have enough. Oh, I got it. Just tell me the right answer. And I got it. But I just wanted to give an example of giving. When you, if you know, and you're in that community, and how do we lift ourselves up out of fear? You know, I have a brother that loves to fish, right? Man, if you go on fishing, grab one of the kids in the neighborhood, get two or three of them. Brothers, take these young brothers fishing. Take a day where you go and play on the basketball court. They've never had a daddy. You know, show them. My friend Roger Kennedy is phenomenal. I mean, he was the best dressed kid as when we were younger. And he created a program called Boys to Men. And he teach men how to measure young men, how to get the pants off their butts and how to tie their ties. We must hold ourselves accountable and helping each other. No one's going to understand our story like us. There is no big government budget that's going to rescue the Black community or any of those things. We have the tools. We have the natural born talent. We've proven that for 5,000 years. That we have the tools and talent to get this done. When people say to me, Tanya, they gentrified the neighborhood and now I'm selling my house. I can't afford to stay in my neighborhood. Yes, you could have. You know what? Tell me why won't Black people buy the $15,000 foreclosure on the block and get it fixed and turn it into $200,000 and 4 years later it's worth $500,000. I did that. I've done it in multiple cities, right? And you don't have to leave. Nobody's going to make you move. And there's also an accountability ourselves. And mm-hmm. I'm originally from Chicago. Where is the parents on that block or somebody that say, look, we're going to do curfew for these three homes. We don't have the energy or space or time to do the whole block. I got these three homes. You got these three. I got breakfast this month. These three homes. You got lunch three.
And you know, LaTanya, it's the sense of community. We said on an earlier podcast about, you know, here we go again, being Black. What we as Black women have been able to do all over the world, and especially in the United States, because of the period of slavery, we have always been able to come together as a community. What I think we have allowed is the lack of vulnerability, because nobody will know. People will say, you know, don't nobody know what I'm going through. Well, baby, if you don't tell us, we don't know. But that sense of vulnerability of letting people know what you need and letting them know what you have to offer, because it's not so much as that. I think we try to make the solution too difficult. The solution is actually easy, but we have to be so teachable. Easy. We have to be so vulnerable. Good. We have to be willing to give and to receive. This is the only way we have made it. This is what makes us magical, is the sense of community. When you didn't have the flour, this one had the sugar. And by the time we got done, everybody ate cake.
Right.
Everybody ate cake.
Right. And I mean, you know, well, it's sort of sit back. So I have a country house mm-hmm. and I bought this country house and I bought up a lot of rose bushes and I thought, I'm going to give all of my neighbors a rose bush. Right. Community. My neighbors were like, don't put that bush in my yard. Then I'm going to have to water it. And I have to tell you, I had never been in this space. It's not my social group. I've never heard of such a thing. I took me back. I had to go in the house. I brought my rose bushes and I thought to myself, how does that work for them? And then I thought, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This is 2 years ago. I'm going to plant them. I have a half a block. I own a half a block. I'm going to plant all the rose bushes down the front of the yard, right along the fence. And now everyone goes, oh girl, I should have got one of those rose bushes. But guess what I've done? I've dug them up, right? you're about 2 feet higher now. I said, you still can have one. Mm. And I dug it up, and some people said, do you mind if I have two? I said, I don't mind if you have two. And so the approach, sometimes you have to come up, people don't even, they're even afraid to accept kindness. We have a lot of hard work to do, but here's the most beautiful part. Over and over again, the harder the work gets, we still see tens and thousands of people of color that have had some of the worst challenges rise to the occasion. Tyler Perry sleeping in a car, a billionaire, right? Influencing the entire movie industry, impacting it globally, correct? You know, we see these stories over and over, and that's why they tell them. You know, Oprah, people, I didn't get this. When she started, being a full-figure brown woman with an afro was not the place to be, wasn't the thing to do, from Mississippi. And she was, people said, why is she telling her business? She'd been raped. And when she didn't graduate college, it is the most phenomenal story that we can hold on to. And when I go on Facebook and I hear people say, I don't like it, da-da-da-da-da, I hear all the fear, all the negativity. Well, she wasn't my cup of tea. Well, why? You know, and so we know we have work to do, but I am still, even though we still have a lot of work to do, there is enough people of color that are doing outstanding things today that we, if we took a responsibility to mentor one or two people, whether it's a business, whether it's just a family, whether you go like me, I went to the projects of Jersey City in a Jaguar. Did you hear me? Shout out to my Jersey City people. And I actually taught a workshop. And some of the women had a job interview and they were about my size. I went home and got them some suits. Now I'm not bragging, and no one's ever known that story. And one of those women, I had whipped her with a shoe for stealing a child's bike. Yes, I can go there. I was trying to get this crackhead from taking a kid's bike, and I see it. I said, what's going on? The kid is going my bike. I take my house shoe, pop, 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 let go of that bike. She comes back to me. She's 40 pounds larger 2 years later, and she says to me, do you remember me? I said, no. She said, you whooped me with a house shoe, and now I'm working in the Board of Education as a teacher's assistant. I'm no longer on crack, and I'm in a program. I beg for people. I don't care. They're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. It's how you learn. I don't want to do anything without making a mistake. I've cheated the system, and I'm more concerned about the things that now I'm not equipped. Not succeeding and pivoting is giving you the tools you need and the brain power and the essence. Everything is growing, and that's those moments you're looking for.
Yes.
You know, we have more than enough people to put their hands on one or two people or one or two people, you know, one or two persons, or one person, whatever, right? Because my brain is moving quicker than my tongue. And impact. I think about all the people I saw marching. If all of those people helped one person.
Yes.
Right? One. If all of those persons went back home and not just say, we got to march again, they continued doing and say, I'm going to reach out and have one person.
Yes.
I got this one kid.
I don't think we realize the power of one. One touch, one time, one trip, one opportunity. I have always, I did not have mentors like I thought I may have needed them in life. And so I wanted to become what I needed. So the ability to not only mentor people younger than me, but to mentor people where I know where I used to be. And it goes back to the willingness to receive help. And I know a lot of times people aren't trusting, but you've got to get to the point where you are so sick and tired of whatever stage you are in that you choose to trust, you know, because everything you're going to get a learning experience, you know, from every, you know, from anything that you go through. But I think it still goes back to that vulnerability.
letting people know what you don't have, letting people know what you would, and then not being competitive. This whole separatism to me is a spirit sparked by social media. This whole thing where, I'm gonna be over here with mine, or I'm gonna cut them off, and this whole cancel culture situation. I think it goes back to the sense of community. You said it earlier, forgiving people, letting it go. And I know that, don't be no fool now. Don't get burned twice. But right. At the same time, and that right. goes back to listening. When you right. listen to the God in you or your spiritual being, if you take time, a lot of people can't listen. Do you agree, LaTonya, because they don't take time to listen? I was sharing with Jada the other day, and we were talking about prayer. And I said, Jada, one thing people don't realize or don't choose to understand is prayer is a two-way. However you pray, whenever you pray, you let your request be made known, but then you need to sit there and listen for directions, because prayer right. isn't about standing still. There's a moment of stillness, but prayer is about listening to get instructions for what to do about what you just right. prayed for.
People don't hear the instructions because they're talking too much. Yeah. I said to someone the other day, I said, your answer is not going to show up loud. She said, I prayed to God, and I said, God, tell me if I should buy this house. I said, did you put God on a timetable? How long did he have to get back to you? Well, I told the homeowner I was going to get back to them by Friday. I said, so you went, now this, you went into prayer and said, God, let me know by Friday if I should buy the house. How does that work for you? I said, actually, you're thinking out of a space of scarcity. Because the fact is, maybe this ain't your house. Maybe another house is. But you have to listen. And I have to tell you, I really believe that God's voice is so quiet. It's almost like a whisper. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like something says, don't forget to pay that bill today.
Yes. Right?
You say to yourself, oh man, I thought about it. And then all of a sudden yeah. you get home and the cable's off. And you say, I thought about it.
Yeah. And you know, I agree. I believe God's voice is still and small, but the more we train our spiritual ear and enhance our spiritual intelligence to listen to it, it gets louder because we pay attention to it faster. It may not be that the volume is louder, but our ear is more keen to go with that direction, because God ain't going to talk through a bunch of noise. There's a lot of noise going on now. It's a lot of voices in the world, including this one on a podcast. Yeah. But when you are in tune to listen to the God of you yourself, and even if we use the example you just gave so wonderfully about the person saying, is it meant for me to buy this house? There could have been some listening skills before getting to this point of indecision.
Right.
What got you to this point of indecision? What could you have prevented, or what things or steps could you have taken that you'd right. even get to this point of, is it this house or not? You know, so I think there's some precursors to some of these things we want to throw on and levy on God, or throw on the state of the Black community, or throw on the state of the world. When if we just listen, I'm not saying we're going to solve white folks' problems that call these white folks issues, but there is a level of solution that is in our DNA. And if we just take time to listen and then be open to instruction and teaching and being coached and being vulnerable, girl, you got me so excited, because
and this could, for someone listening, go, oh, I got to do all these things. But then you can, here's what I'm going to suggest. To start at step one, I was with a young lady, and she was a cop, and she had gone through a lot of financial problems. And she said, why are you selling homes? I said, actually, I'm going to open my own brokerage company one day. So I have to be a realtor before I have a brokerage company. And she said, it sounds so easy for you. She said, well, what for you? But how do I get through this? And I said, hold my hand. She said, excuse me? Is she a cop? She's a rough cop. Sorry. She was a tough lady. And I said, hold my hand. And she said, what? And she said, Miss Julia, I said, give me your hand. And I squeezed it. And I said, let's walk up and look at this condo. We're going to talk about it. We're going to, just have a moment. And we finished. And then she cried. And she said, no one's ever held my hand through something. And so my thoughts are, my dear people, grab someone, hold their hand. It's not always monetary or anything like that. And it's okay. Some people will call you too much during this moment of fear, and you say, let's take a deep breath and call me tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll deal with this, it's not overwhelming, but I guarantee you that the average person still spends more time worried about what people have to say or responding back to a negative comment than they do if they just did something kind for someone.
Yes.
And I put my all on this. When you give, you get. It is a basic science. And you may think, I'm always giving and no one ever gives me back. Maybe you weren't listening to accept what you were supposed to get.
Yes, or maybe you don't recognize it, because maybe, back to my conversation with my daughter again, I said, Jada, if you give somebody watermelon seeds, what do you expect back? You don't expect seed back. You want a watermelon. Right. So sometimes we don't realize what we receive in the law of reciprocity, because the seed, the watermelon, you don't, if I give you watermelon seed, you better not give me no watermelon seed back.
Right.
Sometimes what we receive is unrecognizable from what we sow. So what we reap may not even look like it. Sometimes you may have sown something monetarily, but maybe it came back in the form of health or maybe someone's time, because I refuse to believe that I feel like when I give, I'm most like God. So I refuse to believe that I can give something and God not give back to me. I may not recognize it, but because it's a cycle, I want it to be seamless. I'm not looking to give and Paul's receive. I'm in giving mode so much that when I'm receiving, I don't even recognize which seed it is.
Absolutely.
I don't even know which one it is.
Absolutely. So we're talking about, I totally agree. And it's such a feeling. I'm really addicted to it. It's my feel good. I really, and you won't hear me say, well, they made me. Oh, you ain't never getting that much power. Oh no, baby!
Did you just pop your collar? Did I see you pop?
I jacked up. I messed up. I'm accountable, and I have the power to change it. I'm never going to give you that my power, right? So, we're talking about getting through these thresholds of issues that empower us to take control of our lives, our community, which increases the capacity of our mental health, right? So now we're talking about it's okay to tell people really how you feel and not be worried about what they're going to do with it or how they're going to do it. Because let me tell you, people do it anyway without you telling them. And so, I'm saying that you just don't tell everyone. You start to create your own tribes. We all are little tribes. And the more you grow, you're going to expand in your tribe. You're going to change and adjust tribes. You're going to spend more time with another tribe versus the other. Just think of it as a tribe. And make sure you're in the tribe that you're trying to be or work or be like, right? Don't stay in the mud when you're trying to get clean. Get into a tribe that you know you can grow. So, because I know I've thought to myself, boy, if this was maybe my 25-year-old niece, she may be busting her head a little bit. And so this, just tell the truth brings you a certain level of power, accountability, control, and life strategy, right? And then we're talking about just getting quiet so you can hear it, right? And we're talking about give, my sweeties. Give till you can't get. Just give. It's really easy. I step out of line sometimes to make sure someone goes ahead of me. I pick up paper across the street in my neighbor's yard because it blew out of the garbage. They didn't see it. All of this is giving. It's not always.
We have to deny it. We have to suppress it, because it's just human nature to give. I don't care if it's opening a door for someone or holding a door, putting a grocery cart back. Something in us is just the right thing. Latonya, I appreciate you, because I was like, okay, I'm going to have her on and we can talk. You and I have talked for hours. In the giving and receiving and conversation and the giving and receiving and coaching and the forgiving. And I am just so impressed with who you are. And you did not disappoint. And I knew you wouldn't, because you came with the spirit of giving. When I asked you, and I was like, you know, what can we talk about? But you still cover so many bases. Well, because we did cover the real estate.
You know, we did cover a lot.
We cover so much. Yeah. And I'm grateful for it. And I think this goes back to you being such a giver. I thank you for giving, because I don't want you to leave without telling us you're next. You do so much on one hand, but yet you're in control. You're not just a busy bee. You're very you're very methodical.
Methodical.
You have strategies. I've learned that from you and in some other spaces, but hard work don't mean you work all the time. I have fun in what I do. Yes. Thank God I've gotten to that place in life where what I do is fun. The moment it stops being fun, that's not for me.
Yes.
I'm not saying that it's easy all the time, but it's fun. But you have something new going on in the works. I forgot to mention you were on Not Just Talk Radio that you did and had me on your show. But what's in the works for you now? Yes, I enjoy being on.
I had a life emergency and got a phone call, which I literally had to step away for a year, and would do it over and over and over again. And I've learned a lot this year. I'm not the same person. So, and I hope I'm a better person. But I also have a greater appreciation for our time on this earth, more than I've ever even thought about it. And the radio network Voice America contacted me and said, you know what, Tanya, you're really making strides and having a lot of conversations in the real estate industry. Would you like to be one of the first African-American, or if not the first African-American woman with a real estate show? And I said, well, let me see how I can make it. I won't do the show if I cannot offer enough information that just not educate people about getting a home and moving a home and investments, but how to maintain a home and create a sustainable life with a home and have a home with a sense of well-being. It's more than just a home. Yeah. And if I can't design a strategy, a business model that will do that, you can get any realtor on the radio.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we love that. And the executive producers have now approved it. It launches next week. It's about how you're living.
And congratulations.
It just covers a whole lot of spaces, including a segment on how to increase the capacity of your community. You know, you don't always have to pack up and leave and go to a community that's getting it right versus being a part of the current community and developing something that works for that community and making it better. And I thought it was a time for that. And so I'm very, very excited about that. And as you know, that I bought a house that was supposed to be related to the slaves that was a part of my family. That's 58 years old. And I've restored this wonderful jewel. And I have a couple of things in the fire to possibly try to buy some of these plantation homes that have some historic legacy to it and restore them and actually even give them to women, give them to families, and share them or use them for organizational retreats for women of color and things like that. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. I still mentor a couple of businesses, but I'm really trying to step away from that a little bit. And there's just writing some screen information for some life stories. And so it's an exciting time, but it's not a lot of work. I don't feel like it's work. I just think it's just a divine time to do what I can do. And I think it's needed,
you know, something you just said that resonates with me, because it's a place that I was in is when you say step away from some things. Sometimes people don't want you to stop doing something because you're good at it. And I think especially women of a certain age,
yes.
We have to get to a point where we do. I know Iyanla just talked about how she didn't want to do the energy. She didn't want that energy anymore.
Yes.
And I think we have a right as women, especially Black women. There's some things that I've done very productive, very successful, but I don't want to do that anymore that way in that space. And so in the shifting, in the pivot, knowing that everything we've said, I'm having to do, I'm having to listen, I'm having to hold somebody's hand, I'm having to understand the pivot, knowing what I don't know, and tell somebody I don't know, you know, and trust that. So I appreciate when you just said some things you've had to step away from and shift. Was that difficult for you?
Oh my goodness. You know what? There comes a time you really don't know how. You know, we assume we think we're strong, but how would I say, we have real, it's hard for our brains to conceive what we can really do because it's beyond our imagination. The fact is, our doing is beyond our imagination, but we have a tendency to live in the space we know. And so people say you can only do based on the capacity of what you know. The fact is, if you step out of that space, that controlled space, you realize You could do things beyond your, right? Beyond.
Yes.
And every celebrities say it all the time. I knew I wanted to be a celebrity. I never thought I would win an Oscar and a Grammy. And I never thought I could write and reach people. I never even conceived it. I never conceived the strength and the vulnerability of what I've had to go through in the past year. I had to sit back and literally reintroduce myself to this person that made it to the other side. And that gave me the power, actually, because I love the field of brand development and marketing. And I don't do those flyer things. I'm a real true blue strategist. I build viable growth models that make a lot of money. But I knew that my time in that space, that there was a much more important time to the space living for me. But if I can only share to you, we are made in a magnificent way beyond our imperfect brains can ever conceive. And we really can take anything thrown at. We really can.
Latoya, even a pandemic, you know, even where we are with this, some people prospered during a pandemic. Some people, and I think some people saw the pandemic as imprisonment or punishment. And some people saw it as a pause and an opportunity to pivot. And we all have levels of growth that we've experienced. But I just thank you for sharing with us. I thank you for this year for you, that even though it like you said, the person went on to the other side, but the areas where you said it caused growth in you, your ability to give more, you know. I thank you so much for that. The things you've spoken into my life, the compliments that you've given me, the encouragement that you've given, the way you've allowed me to serve you, you know, I just appreciate you holistically. And I thank you. And so you say the show starts next month and it's called How You Living?
Well, actually next week, noon Eastern time, it's on Voice America. It's on all the other platforms, but yeah, it's live. And it's How You Living. And we're going to hit some really important points that hopefully, allow people to meet their goals and to achieve what they want and take back their sense of being in community. And because we've given so much, you know, the internet, people can just give yourself away. And hopefully if it save and help a couple of families, I'm happy. But if it tips and creates a new sense of self, I'm excited.
I thank you. You just don't realize how much encouragement you've given and inspiration you've given to me today, because there's some things going on in the podcast world, especially in the community of Black women, where it can get kind of rough until you realize conversations like this can bring me back to my why, that I'm my why, and the reason why I started doing this, and knowing and understanding and having the privilege of meeting people like you who are just amazing. So I want to thank you, Latoya Jr., for being on the Black Women's World podcast. We will have her information underneath on the YouTube video and our video cast, and in the podcast, it'll be in the write-up. But we thank you. Is there anything that you would like to, any other words you'd like to leave with our sisternistas and sisternista lovers from all over the world?
If no one told you they love you today, I do.
And she means it. She means it. She means it. She means it.
I genuinely love you. Unconditionally. I just don't have a problem with it. It's my being.
Thank you so much, Latoya. Black Women's World podcast listeners, thank you for listening. Much love and peace. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Black Women's World podcast, the BWWP, brought to you in part by Tracy Mack Solutions for Life Institute, coaching and training services. No doubt you have enjoyed being in our world, and it doesn't have to stop here. Head on over to blackwomensworld.com. This is my personal invitation to you to stay connected with me on social media and more. I'd love to see you there. And I'm so grateful you came to be with me here. Invite someone else to join you in our queendom next time so they can feel the vibe of our tribe.
of Sister Nistas and Sister Nista lovers too. Remember to be kind, be authentic, be generous, be excellent, be grateful, and while you're at it, go ahead and be extraordinary. Because that's just what Sister Nistas do, on purpose, through mission, with passion and compassion. It's a Black woman's world, baby, and you, my Sister Nista, are proof. I'm your self-discovery companion, your professional peacemaker, and your host, Tracy Mack. Wherever you are in the world, may you love and be loved by somebody. Peace.